And welcome to Cat's Whiskers, and thanks for all your letters and entries for our National Pet Week competition.
Yes, we've had a really hard time deciding which ones we like the best, but we've chosen five winners, and here they are. Firstly, Bonnie Hallam, who has an orange goldfish called Goofy because he has got no teeth.
And Elizabeth Baldwin, her guinea pig is called Samuel Johnson, and she named it after that famous dictionary writer who came from Litchfield, where Elizabeth had been on holiday.
Another one is from Philippa Wayne, who has a Vietnamese pot-bellied pig called Wilbur, and it's called after the pig in the book Charlotte's Web.
And our fourth winner is James Clark. He's got a black and white cat called Jasper, and he called him Jasper for two reasons. He took the initials of his family, which means spelling it J-A-S-P-A, and because he looks like Jasper Carrot.
Our fifth winner is Crispian Hindmarch, who has a pet Abyssinian guinea pig called Angus. They decided on that name because when they got him, it looked like a Scotsman's sporran.
So congratulations, you five will be receiving National Pet Week sweatshirts. And we've also chosen 20 runners-up, and you'll get T-shirts or books and badges. Now on to tonight's programme. Our birthday guest is Mike Oldfield, who performs this well-known signature tune. And we'll be hearing more about Mike Oldfield and his music later in the programme.
Also tonight, Dr. Pete will be here to talk about pirates and buried treasure. And we're also going to have our own Cat's Whiskers treasure hunt with Bill Torrance.
And Bill Oddie tells us a Cat's Whiskers tale.
On weekdays during the summer holidays, Gary would get on his bike and cycle over to his grandparents' house on the other side of the village. One day, while they were there, all having a bit of lunch, Gary's granddad suddenly opened his mouth and yawned. Joe, whispered Gary's grandmother sternly, please, not at the dinner table.
Oops, beg pardon, said Gary's granddad. But I was awake at 5:30 this morning. It always happens. Every day since we sold up the farm, I've been waking up at 5:30 to go out and milk the cows. Only when I get there I find there's no cows to be milked. I go out mid-morning to feed the sheep. Only what do I find then? No sheep to be fed. I go to the market, only to find I've got nothing to buy and nought to sell. It's a rum do, I can tell you.
Do you know what you need, Grandad? Gary said.
Gary's grandad shook his head. Oh.
A hobby. The boy's got a point, Joe, said Gary's gran. Look at me and my hobbies. Mondays, I deliver Meals on Wheels. Tuesdays, I go to Mother's Union. Wednesdays, I clean the church brasses. Thursdays, I do me shopping. And Fridays, I do me baking.
Aye, but...
No buts! Gary, you just make sure you sort your grandfather out a nice hobby before I get back from Mother's Union.
So off went Gary's gran. So, what hobbies have you got then, Gary? Asked his granddad.
Oh, you know, the usual sort of stuff. I watch birds, I make model aeroplanes.
Oh, I don't think they're my sort of hobbies somehow. Gary's granddad shook his head. No.
Well, all right, what about stamp collecting, said Gary.
Grandad shivered. Do you know the most boring thing I ever had to do when I were a boy?
Cleaning your bedroom, suggested Gary.
Nope. Collecting blooming stamps.
Well, all right, then, it doesn't have to be stamps. I mean, if you find them boring, don't bother with them, reasoned Gary. If it's for a hobby, you can collect, well, anything.
Eventually, Gran got back from the Mother's Union.
Hey, Gran, I fixed Grandad up with a hobby. It's collecting. Collecting what, might I ask? Well, you just have a look in the back bedroom, suggested Gary.
Gary's Gran peered round the back bedroom door.
Ooh, lummy, she said.
This afternoon, said Gary's grandad, Gary and I have been round junk shops in the town and collected 3 old tin baths, 11 walking sticks, and a pram with 3 wheels.
Over the next 3 weeks, Gary and his grandad went to the junk shops collecting any junk that took grandad's fancy. Soon, the whole house was piled up with grandad's junk collection, and Gary could see there was going to be trouble. And there was. One Friday, Gary's gran opened the oven door to pop in an apple pie. she screamed. And believe me, it took an awful lot to make Granny go,
that does it, she stormed. There are 5 headless garden gnomes in my oven.
Well, I thought I might perhaps
cry over my dead body, fumed Gary's gran. I want the gnomes, plus the lawnmowers and the lavatory seats in the lounge, the bagpipes and the old car batteries in the bathroom and the 16 hoovers out in the hall. I want them all out of here by next week, together with any other junk that might be lurking around. And you can give the whole house a proper spring clean afterwards.
What about me hobby? Protested Gary's granddad.
If you want to collect something, you can collect one thing and one thing only.
Well, like what?
Stamps, suggested Gary's gran.
Gary and his granddad loaded everything into a van.
Oh, dear. I don't know what to collect, you know. Hey, leave the hoovers, Gary. They'll come in useful for spring cleaning the house.
Gary's granddad picked a hoover up carefully.
Fascinating things, hoovers, he said.
Grandad, said Gary, if you find hoovers so fascinating, why don't you make them your thing to collect?
Aye, happen as that will, said Grandad.
Next week, when Gary popped round on his bike, he found the house spick and span. He also found 6 more hoovers in the hall. His grandfather was reading a large book called
A Concise History of the Vacuum Cleaner, Volume 1.
He is a changed man, said Gary's gran. And it's also a changed house. It gets cleaned every day and sometimes at night as well.
It's a fascinating hobby, collecting hoovers, you know. You ought to start collecting something.
Oh, I have, said Gary.
Oh, said his grandad, and what may that be?
Stamps, replied Gary.
Oh, boring.
I wonder why people always joke about stamp collecting being so boring.
I don't know. I found it quite interesting when I was younger.
Yeah, I suppose it's all right if you get a penny black. But anyway, Grandad had a really unusual collection.
He did, yeah. And if you've got an unusual collection, we'd love to hear about it. Write and tell us.
The well-known signature tune to Blue Peter was composed and performed by this week's birthday guest, Mike Oldfield. Welcome to the programme.
Hello.
What inspired you to write the Blue Peter music?
Well, they came out to my studio, which was in Gloucestershire then. They came out with a dog and everything, and they wanted to film me while I was actually recording. So we decided that I would be recording the new Blue Peter signature tune. And I used a lot of folk instruments. I must say, I get a little twinge of pleasure every time I hear that once a week on the TV. It's such an institution, that programme, isn't it?
Well, you mentioned your studio, and this week we're not talking to our birthday guest in the Cat's Whisker studio. We're actually in Mike Oldfield's recording studio. What sort of thing have you got? Can you describe some of it for us?
Well, the main mixing console is where you mix all the instruments together. It's only one of 3 in the country, and I believe 11 in the world. It's totally computerised. You could memorise a complete song, you know, the entire setups for every sound on the complete song. It can bring it back to you, you know, within half a second.
When you were a child with your sister Sally at home, did you learn conventional musical instruments?
In fact, I must say I have my sister to thank for being a musician, because she was the first one who used to play acoustic guitar in folk clubs. And in a way, I followed her, and for a while we actually played together.
What about birthday presents and things? Did you ever get any musical instruments for a birthday present?
Yes, I believe my first guitar my father bought me. I remember there was in this second-hand shop, this lovely red guitar. And I remember it cost £8, and I was sort of on at him for weeks, saying, oh, Dad, will you buy me that guitar? Will you buy me that guitar? And he kept saying, no, no, no. And then finally one day he brought it into my room, and I was so pleased. It's a real electric guitar, and a red one too. It was fantastic.
But you're the envy of everybody at school. You're sitting in front of a keyboard now. Is this where you actually start to write a song or compose music?
This keyboard actually is my way of inputting music into the computer. And I put down different instruments one by one, and then the computer plays all the different instruments through this channel of musical communication called MIDI.
What about your birthday tomorrow, the 15th? Have you got any plans for doing anything then?
I really love curries, you see, so I usually get a few friends and go out for a big slap-up curry.
And are you going to be able to do that, because you've got your head down trying to work on an LP at the moment?
Well, I'm planning to finish it. In fact, I've just finished it.
What's it called? What's it about?
Well, we're still debating the title and working out the cover. Mm. It's 10 songs, and it's quite rocky songs.
Is there a theme running through the whole thing?
Quite a lot of the songs are dedicated to my own children, actually, because I got four children, and they're a wonderful source of inspiration.
Do you prefer to actually do the music side than to the words?
No, I love writing lyrics. You know, I think songwriting is not as difficult as it's made out to be. I think most people could do it.
What about this new LP, then? How long has it taken you to do that?
About 9 months. Oh. It's a lot of work, yeah.
Well, I hope it's successful.
Thank you.
And you enjoy your curry on May the 15th.
Thank you very much.
Before we go, you always ask our birthday guests to choose some music. Now, have you got anything you'd like us to play for you?
Oh, well, why not play a track off the new album?
Why not, indeed, if you could select something.
Okay, we'll play One Glance is Holy.
Thank you very much, indeed.
It's a pleasure.
Have a good time tomorrow, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Harmony always. When I look around me and your smile I see, I can feel it surround me. A miracle I find in your company. One glance is all that I need. What I was searching for, I found it.
Members sharing a birthday with Mike Oldfield, Frederick Partridge, Sarah Steeds, Lucy Brikeno and Victoria Simon,
Rupert Barnett, Jenny Cohen, Jonathan Kipping and Hannah Coleman,
Elizabeth Mackley, Harry Blanchard, Naomi Harris and Julie Asher.
Happy birthday also to club members Gracie Elson, Zachary Wilcock, Debbie Harding and James Dickinson.
It's happy birthday to Sally Bates, Jonathan Nair, Nicola Ireland and Charlotte King.
Also Stephanie Hazel, Laura Pomfret, Stephen White and Ted Sandling.
Happy birthday to Perdita Armstrong, Kerry Greenwood, Catherine Eady and Oliver Toop.
Also Rebecca Ava, Calvin Taylor, Ian Jones and Emily Sandy.
And lastly to Hannah Pearson, Sarah Eagle, Ambrose Boyd Kirkup, David Cross and Unity Locke. Happy birthday to everyone celebrating this week. The world's biggest birthday party is going to be held at Alton Towers on Saturday the 27th of May. It's the 70th birthday of the charity Save the Children. If you'd like to join in the celebrations with Roy Castle and help to blow out the 70 candles on the cake, write in to us for more details by the end of this week.
Well, once again in the Cat's Whiskers studio, we've got Dr. Pete talking to us about treasure hunting in the Seychelles. Dr. Pete, welcome to the programme again.
Thank you, Adrian.
So how was it in the Seychelles? I mean, you went out there, was it just for a treasure hunt, or were you going sunbathing?
I was sunbathing as well, laying on the golden beaches and doing a bit of writing, but I've been going there for 10 years now, and I'm convinced there's some treasure there, so I had a look round to see how the other treasure hunters were going.
So did somebody give you a treasure map to go look for the treasure?
I found one in the National Archives about 10 years ago, and that was supposed to come from a guy called Olivier Levasseur, who was a French pirate that they hung on the 7th of July 1730. They also called him La Bouse, which means the buzzard. He really started all this going, because as he was going up to the scaffold on this French Navy ship in Reunion Harbour, he threw a piece of paper down and he said, "The secret of my treasures to he who can understand." And people have been looking for this fabulous treasure ever since. They hung him straight away afterwards. And you've heard of Blackbeard, have you?
I have heard of Blackbeard, one of those famous pirates.
He was the supreme, most terrifying, cruel and bloodthirsty of the lot. He had this big black beard, which he never cut, which went down to his chest, up to his eyes. He would plait it with ribbons, and he would put lighted, slow-burning matches under his hat before he went into battle.
Oh, yeah.
Because it terrified everybody, you see, and his face would be shrouded in this mist of smoke.
We're talking about looking for the treasure now. Was it all on land, or were there some shipwrecks that were involved?
Not any shipwrecks, no. I mean, the pirates buried their treasure on land, well away from the beaches. They didn't bury them on the beaches, because obviously beaches shift with the tide.
Mm.
And they would bury them at places like Bellombre, which is on Mahé, the main island in the Seychelles, and that's where I've been particularly interested in looking for treasure, because in 1923, a low tide uncovered some rocks with really strange markings on a horse, a dog, a large staring eye, an engraving of a woman, and this matched in with some of the documents, the maps, what's called cryptograms of Labuz, the buzzard. So that's what made people think that there might be treasure here. In fact, they did a little bit of digging and they found two skeletons with gold earrings, and people have been looking ever since,
so
including me.
What sort of treasure are you looking for then? Is it like pieces of eight or gold?
Everything. Adrian, listen, when Labuz robbed a ship in 1721, a ship of the King of Portugal, a 60-gun warship, he found casks of jewels, bars of gold and silver, rivers of large diamonds, works of art worth £60 million at the time. That's in 1721. So
wow.
Goodness knows what it's worth now, and that's what we've been looking for.
Well, I wish you all the best when you go back to the Seychelles and try and look for the treasure. Well, I presume you didn't find it this time round.
I didn't, no. I had a wonderful time, as the pirates did. They used to love to go there on the beaches because it was wonderful there with all the fresh fruit and food and sun and the good weather. So I had a good time like the pirates did.
Well, I hope you find it next time, and thanks for sharing your stories on Cat's Whiskers.
Thanks very much indeed, Adrian, and to all of you who've written to me at Cat's Whiskers.
So if you've got any questions about pirates, shipwrecks or lost treasure, write to Dr. Pete at Cat's Whiskers, and as usual, the address will be given at the end of the programme.
Instead of Adrian's brain teaser this week, we've got something you can all join in with, a Cat's Whiskers treasure trail. Bill Torrance will be travelling around the British Isles over the next 6 weeks, stopping at a different place each Sunday. He'll give you a rhyming clue as to where he is each week. When you think you've solved the first clue, write to us for a treasure trail entry form. You'll need this form to fill in the answers to the clues each week. They will, of course, eventually lead to the treasure. Let's join Bill now at his starting point.
Hello, I'm Bill, and for the next 6 weeks we're going to be travelling around the British Isles. Now, I'm starting off today right here in the middle of Manchester. And in a minute, I'm going to set off on stage one of the great CWTT, the Cat's Whiskers Treasure Trail. I'm not going to tell you where I'm going, but I am going to give you a clue every week. It'll be in rhyme. So here's the first one. Start with a six. Then follow a star, past two highest peaks, one near, one far. There a monstrous lake may provide a shock, for there is no key that will turn this lock. Got it? Oh, I hope not. It's not supposed to be that easy. I tell you what, I'll give it to you again when I get there. Won't take me a minute. On your marks, get set, go! Made it. I had to rush, so there was time to give you the clue again. Now, don't forget, I set off from Manchester. And the clue for getting here is, start with a six, then follow a star. Past two highest peaks, one near, one far. There a monstrous lake may provide a shock, for there is no key that will turn this lock. Any ideas? follow a star. It could be a pop star. Or could be a star in the sky. Past two highest peaks. I wonder what they are. And what's the monstrous lake? Or, loch, as I would say. Oh, I nearly forgot. Once you've worked out where I am now, there's a question for you to find out the answer to. And here it is. What is the name of the canal that leads from here? Time for me to go. See you next week. Bye!
If you didn't manage to catch Bill's clue, then you'll find it printed in next week's Early Times newspaper. And the Cat's Whiskers treasure at the end of the trail is a terrific family weekend at Centre Park's Holiday Village in Elvedon Forest.
It's a brilliant prize, so make sure you send in for your entry forms.
Now for our serial, The House of Arden. The children are still hunting for their treasure in Episode 4, Gunpowder, Treason and Plot.
Edred and Elfrida had travelled back in time to the days of smugglers and shipwrecks. There was still no sign of the treasure of Arden Castle, so they decided to summon the White Mouldiwarp again.
Dear. So it's a trip back to King James I's time you're wanting now, is it?
Well, Edred thinks that might be when the treasure was hidden.
Well, he knows how to go about it. Just go through the door in the attic room and put on the right clothes out of the chests. The pigeon noises will dress you like before.
Well, yes, we know all that, but it's just...
We wondered if you could think of an excuse for us to give to Mrs. Honeysett when we get back, we mean. She was so worried when we were away in 1807.
Oh, well, if you'd have asked, I'd have told. If you're going to go gallivanting into ancient days, you'll need to set the clock back so nobody knows you're gone.
How do we do that?
Young folks don't know nothing. Go get up into the gate tower up there and watch. When you see the clock, come down and set on the second hand. Young folks know nothing.
Well, I think this is silly. There's no clock down there, just the lawn.
No. But Edred, look! Look, the daisies! It's as if they're walking about.
And so they were. Stiffly, steadily, like well-drilled soldiers, the daisies formed into twos, into fours, into companies, and marched until they formed the shape of a clock face, around which a white second hand, also formed of daisies, wheeled with a precision that any general in the land would have admired. With one accord, the two children rushed down the twisty steps of the gate tower and across the lawn to the clock. In the very centre of the clock face sat the Mouldiwarp, looking just a little bit conceited.
Now, one of you sit on the second hand to stop it, and the other can go off back in history. And when you get back, it'll be the same time as when you left, see?
But isn't there a way we can go off together?
Yeah.
Young folks, bother. If you wants to go together, wheel that wheelbarrow onto the second hand. That'll stop the clock. You young folks, dear.
They wheeled the heavy barrow across the clock. Then Edred and Elfrida ran up into the attic room and were helped into the clothes of James the first time by the helpful pigeon noises.
Isn't it strange how we change our clothes and the times change too?
Yeah.
Edred, look at my skirt.
Elfrida giggled at her own long hooped skirt, and even more at Edred, who didn't look quite the part in his breeches and tunic, since he was clutching his box camera.
You'd better hide that. They didn't have cameras in James the first time.
I'll leave it behind the curtain for now, but I'm determined to get some pictures of the castle when it was all perfect.
Ah, so 'tis here thou art hidden, and thy father and lady mother awaiting thee to accompany them to his majesty's court. Oh, come along.
Oh, there's no need to pull my arm.
Am I going too?
Nay, thou canst not. Little ladies must stay at home and sew their samplers.
Oh. Edred was driven off with Lord and Lady Arden in a fine carriage. Elfrida was left to sit in front of the very large sampler in its wooden frame. For a while she poked her needle miserably at the canvas, and then, to her surprise, a friendly-looking boy of about her own age burst into the room.
Is thy task done, cousin?
Yes.
Mine too. Old Parrotnose kept me hard at my studies, but I'm all done now. Come, let's play in the garden.
The garden, with its box hedges and statues, was just the place for a game of hide-and-seek, and Elfrida and her cousin Richard, for that's who the boy was, played happily and then stopped to rest. Neither of them saw that the sour-faced tutor, Mr. Parrotnose, or Old Parrotnose, as Richard called him, was eavesdropping from behind a nearby hedge.
Tell me, Cousin Richard, what date is it today?
Why, 'tis the 5th of November, of course.
Is it really? Then it's Guy Fawkes Day. Remember, remember the 5th of November, gunpowder, treason and plot.
Hush! Don't talk of treason, cousin.
But it's only history. Don't you know about it? How the king hadn't been fair to the Catholics, and some of them plotted to kill him and blow up Parliament.
What king?
King James the First, of course.
What's this?
Oh, ah. Don't let me go!
Is this a plot against the king?
Let go! Let go of you! You parrot nose!
Not till she tells the names of those involved in this treasonous plot. Come, tell me, young mistress, or it'll be the worse for you and your father.
Ouch! I won't tell you anything.
We'll see about that.
No, stop it. Where are you taking me?
Come on now.
But even though Cousin Richard succeeded in kicking Old Parrotnose's shins, Elfrida was dragged indoors and shut up alone in a room without a window. She wished hard that Edred was home, so that they could summon the Mouldiwarp to fetch them back into their own time. But when Edred did return from the banquet at court, Lord and Lady Arden were with him. Both were confused to find their home occupied by armed guards, and their daughter locked in a room for having chanted some silly rhyme.
I'm sorry. It's only history. I didn't mean to tell or to get you into trouble.
There, child. Thou'st done no harm. Thy father will dispel this nonsense.
Aye, 'tis soon righted, little maid. Tomorrow I'll see my Lord Salisbury, and he shall prick this silly bubble, and we shall all laugh at this plot that a solemn tutor has made out of a young girl's fancies.
Hmm? 'Tis so. Now then, to bed with thee, Edred. Thy sister shall stay with me tonight. She's all a tremble.
But if Elfrida and I aren't together, we can't get back to... I mean, I wanted to tell her all about the banquet and everything.
Tomorrow, Edred, my son. And by tomorrow night, when the good Lord Salisbury has had these guards removed from our home, we shall all lie down in peace, hmm?
But when, next day, Lord Salisbury searched the Houses of Parliament to prove that the talk of a plot was nothing but nonsense, he found in the vaults Guy Fawkes. Night came, and Lord Arden and his lady, and Edred and Elfrida, lay not in Arden Castle, but in the Tower of London, charged with high treason, and awaiting their trial. None of it, of course, was Elfrida's fault, but as she lay awake in the thick-walled tower room, Elfrida couldn't help hating herself. Edred, in a different part of the tower, with Lord Arden, also lay awake, and wondered how, if he and Elfrida weren't allowed to meet, they would ever get back to their own less exciting but much safer times.
So
So Edred and Elfrida are in the Tower of London, which is where we'll be for Cat's Whiskers next week. And I can't wait to see you in some crown jewels, Adrian.
Oh, I've just only seen you in a suit of armour, Julie.
You'll probably need a tin opener to get me out. We'll be hoping to meet some of the Yeoman Warders as well.
Aren't they called the Beefeaters?
Now, apparently their proper name is Yeoman Warders, and there'll be a few ravens.
And with any luck, we'll meet one or two of the ghosts from the Tower's gory past.
So let's hope we don't get locked in. Make sure you join us in the Tower of London next week.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
The address for your Treasure Trail entries and club membership details is Cat's Whiskers, BBC, PO Box 40, Manchester M60 1FR. Cat's Whiskers was presented by Julie First and Adrian Morehouse. Others taking part were Penelope Keith, Henry Power, Kelly Bright, John Hasler, Marcia King, Russell Dixon, Joe Kendall, Michael Graham Cox, and Donald G. The researcher was Liz Roberts, and the programme was produced in Manchester by Mary Karamkarian.